Tesha Jansons, and welcome to Sense in the City, the podcast where we discuss a topic even more taboo than sex. I am talking, of course, about money. This week I'm joined by Katie Marshall from Chicks and Mortar. Tune in as we discuss all things property, including how to know when is the right time to buy or sell. So welcome to the program, Katie.
Thanks, Tash. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. Now, I have to say, I absolutely love, love, love the name of your business and your book, Chicks and Mortar. Before we get stuck into our chat, would you mind just give our listeners a little bit of a background on you and your business?
Yeah, absolutely. So Chicks and Mortar started off just as a social group for women. So I was going to a lot of property seminars and events, and I was meeting a lot of women, and I found that the most information that I learned was from the stories, speaking to them in the breaks. And it got to the stage where I was starting to see the same women, and I realized that we lived nearby, and I just said one day, hey, let's start like a social group so we can share, because the learning's always in the stories that people share and the journeys they've been on. So we started a group and it very quickly grew. Like, it started with two of us, and then it grew. Within 2 months, we were getting like 20 to 30 women coming along every month. And so at that stage, I thought, well, and that it wasn't Chicks and Mortar at that stage. It was just a group. So I thought, there's got to be a business in this. So that's when I rebranded to Chicks and Mortar, and we started bringing on speakers every month to talk about property. That included accountants and brokers, mindset coaches and people like that. And then it just kept growing, and now I'm bringing it all online. Well, I've been working over the last couple of years to bring it all online, so I can reach more women Australia-wide.
And was your background sort of always in real estate, or how did all this come about?
Yeah, no, I'm not in real estate at all, but I have always been in property. So I've always been a property investor. I bought my first home at 19 and then started investing from there. But I've also worked in the industry for years. I started off as an interior designer. I worked for architects and then moved into construction management, where I worked for volume builders and developers and people like that. So, yeah, my background has always been property, not so much real estate. So that's where my interest has always been.
What made you start out so young with property? Like, what made property sort of stand out to you as the, you know, investment avenue?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not too sure. I always knew that I wanted to own property. I just really didn't like renting, and my parents, they invested in property. So I suppose that was always something in the back of my mind that I didn't really think about. I just knew that was going to happen. So, yeah, when the opportunity came up to buy a property, yeah, we jumped at it. So, and we quickly bought the block of land next door to us, and it grew from there. So
you were obviously watching and learning what your parents were doing, and that's sort of where, I guess, the lessons around starting to invest in property would have stemmed from. Was the first property you bought, was that one that you lived in, or was it as an investment?
Yeah, no, it was one we lived in. And it was half built when we bought it. Well, it was probably three quarters built, and we just finished it off. And subconsciously, I don't know if it was just good luck or good timing, but we bought at the right time and then very quickly built equity and were able to sell at the top of the market. And my husband was offered a job in a state. So again, we took the leap and moved up here, and again, bought at the right time and built equity pretty much straight away. So,
wow. Okay. So with starting out so young, and you've obviously built up an investment portfolio since then, reflecting back on that time, what have been some of the, I guess, biggest lessons or surprises that you've sort of encountered along the way?
Well, like I said, I don't know if it was just pure luck or it was just I subconsciously knew what I was doing, but buying and selling at the right time has always been good for us. It's always worked in our favour. So I don't know. Now that I think about it, I think it may have been luck. But now that I know what to look for and what to watch in the market, it's definitely something that I want to teach other women to do.
What you're sort of saying is at the time, if you didn't necessarily realise that you were at the peak, at the top of the market, it was only afterwards, reflecting back, that you realised actually that was actually the best point in time to sell. But since then, you've learned what to look out for so that now you can beforehand recognise where you are in that property cycle. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we sold our house, we were actually in the Blue Mountains at that time. And when we sold it, the buyers then tried to sell it a year and a half later and could not get the same price. So it was definitely at the very top of the market to sell at that time. But we did end up keeping the land, and we held on to the land for quite a few years, and that returned us a good income when we sold that as well. So by that stage, I'd started to learn to watch the market and when it was due to dip and when it was going to rise. So yeah, it definitely, once you know that stuff and you can be aware of it, you really do look back and go, well, I was lucky then, but I could have done it better in this situation. So it's always a case of the more you know, the better you can make your decisions.
Absolutely. Now, I'm very interested to talk more around investing in property and what to look out for. But to start off with, those who own their own home and it's the start of the new year and they may be looking at selling and moving on to somewhere else, do you have any tips around what might be some quick and easy things that they can do that might have a positive impact and increase what their property would fetch for?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you own a property and you're looking to sell, the first thing I would look at is the market. So what's the market in your state doing? What's the market in your suburb doing? What's the market doing in your little pocket? Because in some suburbs, there's good parts, there's bad parts. Once you're aware where your property sit, then you can make a more informed decision about what you're actually going to do going forward, whether it's worthwhile selling straight away, whether it's worthwhile sitting on it for a couple of months just to see what the market's doing. If you see that all the other properties in the area, the prices are going up, then that's something definitely to watch. And then, so once you start doing that, you can start to make a decision on when you're going to sell, whether it's straight away or in a couple of months or in a year. And then you can start looking at your physical property, the condition it's in, how does it compare to neighbouring properties? Like, is there a property on the market that's recently been renovated, and what would be the price difference compared to yours? If you're not really sure how much your property is worth, it's definitely worthwhile to get real estate agents out to give an appraisal. Get a few, get at least three, and they'll be able to give you advice. Ask them for comparable sales, so they'll be able to print off a RP data report to show you what has recently sold for how much, what condition that property is, how comparable it is to yours. So how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, how many garages it has, that kind of thing. So that would be the very first things that I would look at. And there's also online tools that you can use, like Domain have a very accurate data kind of report. You can see what the properties have sold for around you, and you can get an idea of how much yours is likely to sell for too. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer.
No, it was great. Very useful tips. But as far as sort of sprucing the place up, you know, is it worthwhile planting a couple, you know, tidying up the garden, doing those sorts of things, a fresh paint job? Would those things tend to have an impact on how much you can get?
Absolutely. So everyone, well, I'm a visual person, and I find a lot of other people are highly visual people, especially when they're looking at property. So if you've got a lot of clutter, that would be the very first thing you do, because a lot of people can't see past the clutter. They can't see how big a room is if you've got stuff piled up everywhere. Just remove as much stuff as you can. I'd also remove a lot of personal stuff. So take down your photos of, you know, your wedding and your kids and things like that, because people come into your space and they want to imagine themselves there. So that would be another thing. And then, yeah, absolutely, a paint job would definitely make a difference. It's a very cheap way to freshen up your space. And then the three main areas that I would look at in particular would be your kitchen, your bathroom and your entrance. So they're the three main things that, you know, kitchens and bathrooms always sell houses, and the entrance will always be the first impression. So they're the things I would look at the most.
And how do you know, sort of, because you can do something very basic to the kitchen or the bathroom that can have, you know, and can increase, you know, the price for 10, 20, 30,000, whatever the case may be. But you can also go over the top. So you can reach a point where a lot of the stuff you're starting to do really isn't adding any further value from the buyer's perspective, and you're really just wasting your money. Mm-hmm. Are there any sort of tips there around how to know exactly when I'm renovating it, what are the things that it's worthwhile to go and replace and renovate, and to what level of quality to go, and beyond which, you know, I'm not really going to get my return on investment from that perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where your market research comes into play. So you definitely do not want to overcapitalize on your renovations and improvements. So like I said, if you go onto your domain, it will not only give you prices of neighboring properties, but it'll also, you know, if it's recently sold, show the photos. And you can see, you know, what kind of quality, you can, even just driving around, if you've lived in the neighbourhood for quite a few years, you know what kind of quality the other houses are and what kind of quality that price bracket expects. So if you're at a higher price bracket, then you definitely don't want to be doing laminate bench tops when, you know, a stone is what the market will be expecting. If all the other properties on the market have stone bench tops and gas cookers, then you've just got laminate and, you know, an electric cooktop, then you're not really competing with the other properties out there. So once you know what's in the market, then you can start looking at your place and finding the, what you need to be spending your money on and what you can kind of skimp on as well.
And if we turned it on its head and said, okay, well, now that if I put myself in the position of a buyer, I'm going out and buying a property, what might be some things to look out for that could be wrong with the place or whatever the case may be that I can then use to my advantage to sort of negotiate a lower purchase price for it?
Well, the things that really stand out straight away is, you know, rising damp. So if you inspect the outside of the property and you see that the lower courses of bricks are darker, then that may indicate a water issue. If you walk on the grass and you notice some wet spots, that may also indicate a water issue. Just the lay of the land, if you can kind of see where the water's made its own path, that might indicate something as well. It depends really on what kind of property price level you're looking at. Like, I've looked at some really, really, really bad properties where it's not so much what's wrong with it, but what's not wrong with the property. Some of the places I've been in, like, you know straight away that there's a foundation issue because the floors are sloping. You can feel it as you walk. You can hear creaking as you're walking around, and that is kind of an indicator that there's something going on underneath. I always kind of try and check the light switches, the water, like turn the taps on if you can. That kind of gives an indication whether there's, you know, creaking in the pipes or the lights take a little longer to get on. But then again, if you're looking at a newer property, they may not present themselves as if you're looking at a really old property that really needs a lot of work done. It's not so much what you need to look for when you're looking at the property. When you go in to inspect a property, you need to be looking at the room sizes, the amount of rooms, the layout, the light, that kind of thing, and then everything else that may be an issue that you could possibly negotiate on the price will likely be picked up in your pest and building inspection. So when you're inspecting, yeah, you want to be looking at the things that either yourself want if you're buying it for yourself, or a tenant would want if you're using it as an investment property. So that's what I'd be looking at: the room sizes, whether it's got built-ins, how does the light go, what's the orientation of the house, is the garage attached, is it not attached, how easy would it be for them to, you know, live their life in this house, bring in the washing, bring in the shopping, that kind of thing. And then, yeah, when it comes to pricing and actual underlying issues, that's when you need to get a really good pest and building inspector. And that's when you can start negotiating on the price.
Well, my father-in-law is a builder, and it has been such a
blessing for us, because when my husband and I were buying our existing home, we were in our 20s, very young and naive. I certainly did not have that attention to detail. You know, I'd get caught up in how pretty the house is, you know, and if they had some nice furniture or something, it made me feel good. But I would completely not even know to look for, not even notice, you know, that there might be mold marks over there or that there was a crack down there. And my father-in-law's walking along. He's quite a tall guy, 6'5". And, you know, he's there pressing up the ceiling and seeing, you know, whether the floorboards are sagging or whatever it is. And I'm like, going, I had no idea look for any of this stuff. Thank God you're here. Whereas I was really gullible, you know, I would have just gone in and gone, oh my God, this is pretty. I love it. Yep, sold.
Yeah. And it's very common for a lot of people to do that. I've done it myself. Especially when you're looking at a lot of properties, like if you're going out every weekend and you've got 3 or 4 sections to look at every weekend, like I would come home some days and go, I can't even remember what the floor was in that house, or did that house have gas cooking, or I just had no idea. And to be perfectly honest, when I bought my first house, I had no idea that the kitchen had slate tiles. No idea until we moved in. Until we actually inspected before we moved in. That's why I've created like tools for women to take with them at inspections. And I always recommend to take photos, because once you see several properties, you will start forgetting what they look like and they would all blur together.
Exactly. And it's, I suppose, important. It's a bit harder when it's buying the home that for yourself that you want to live in, but also, I guess, checking your emotions at the door to some extent, especially if you're going for an auction or something like that, so that you don't get, because it's very easy to get into that whole, oh my God, I love it. And then the more that other people love it, the more I want this particular one, and it has to be absolutely that one. And I will go to any length to get it. And sort of just learning to sort of cool your heels a little bit, because that's also a very important asset as far as your negotiating power. I mean, if we've bought and sold properties as well, and, you know, if the agent can tell that, you know, that's it, you know, this woman's on the hook, she absolutely loves it. That's the husband, or even the woman herself, she can later try and negotiate all she wants. But if they know that she is absolutely in love with it and will go ahead and buy it, no matter what, there goes your negotiating power. You know, you've got to have a good poker face and sort of be like, you know, that cool detachment, a bit like a dating game, you know, sort of go, oh, you know, yeah, it's nice, but, you know, I'm seeing a couple of others as well. So, you know, give me a number and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, we do tend to lay all our cards on the table as women, don't we? But then, like you pointed out, that's the key to whether you're selling and buying, is that, you know, when you're buying for yourself and you see something that you absolutely love, like that's really going to sway your opinion. When you're buying for an investment, you really need to shut that down, and it's all about the numbers and the figures. That's all it is, and the data. But when you're selling your house, you need to maybe stand out the front of your house and go through it as if you were buying it, and get your friends to do it. And get them to point out what's the elements that, you know, are the absolute stars of your property, and what can you play up and play to people's emotions to make them want to buy it.
The old, you know, have something baking in the house for there to be a nice aroma. Is there anything to that?
Oh, absolutely. There is, yeah, there is a lot to the senses. Like I've got vision problems, so I hear a lot more than a lot of people. Like my husband doesn't hear half the stuff that I hear. So I always tend to listen out for, you know, background noise, whether I can hear the freeway nearby or whether I can hear industrial noise, that kind of thing. And, yeah, definitely if you can smell a nice smell, it will then come back to you when you think about that property.
If we talk about property flipping, you know, I know there's a lot of people that it sounds like an attractive idea. It sounds like a way that you can make a lot of money quite quickly. And, you know, we see enough of those renovation rescue, and there's enough reality TV shows about that kind of thing to lure us in. But what are some advice that you might give around property flipping and around things to look out for? How do you choose a property? All those sorts of things.
Property flipping, you definitely need to keep your emotions in check. It is all about the data, the numbers. the market. So what you want to be knowing straight away before you even start looking at property is what you want to achieve. They're the first kind of things that I teach my clients is where are you now? So what can you bring to the table? What's your finances look like? What's your skill level? What's your risk profile, which is extremely important. And then once you know that, then you work out where you want to be, what you want to achieve, and what is in your capabilities, like what, how much risk are you willing to put into this venture? And then once you know that, you can start getting a fair idea of what kind of property is going to be suitable. Obviously, with flipping, you want to try and get a property as cheap as possible, renovate for as cheap as possible, and then sell for as high as possible. So you want to make sure you're in a market that's rising, that you can get in, get out very quickly, and that you can make changes as quickly as you possibly can to get it back on the market. Because a lot of the costs associated with flipping is the holding it while you're renovating. And of course, there's lots of different levels to flipping. Like there's cosmetic renovations, which don't take long. You could possibly get in and out within 2 weeks. Some you may just need to, you know, paint and new bench top, new carpets, and you're out. Whereas other ones may be more of a structural renovation where you need to submit plans to council and build on additions to get a greater return, that kind of thing. And there's also then elements where you can look at a property and there may be something that you can do to increase equity now, but then it might be worthwhile to rent it out, hold on to it, and then maybe develop that land further on down the track. So until you know what you want to achieve and where you are now, that kind of defeats the purpose of even looking at property.
Exactly. And so many people go into it just sort of going, I just want a quick way to make a buck. I want to make as much money. That's what I want to achieve. As much money in as short a time as I can, go. And you sort of go, you have to get far more targeted and specific than that. And also, as you said, factor in the flip side. If it's not the right time to sell and you can't get what you thought you would get for it, what's then going to be the consequences of that? You know, if you rent it out, can you afford to hold that? And if you have another mortgage, be paying both. How are you going to cover the costs, as you said, while you're holding on to it? Are you still able to pay your rent, or do you have another mortgage to look out for? Who's going to be renovating it? If it's you are going to be doing it yourselves, if you are self-employed or employed, it makes a difference. If you don't have enough leave paid up and you're just going to be taking time, unpaid time off to go and do it, you know, factoring all of those things in, it can be very easy to sort of be, again, quite romantic about the idea and sort of go, oh, you know, we'll take a month off, we'll go in, we'll do it ourselves, it'll all be a lot of fun. But it's important to, again, just have your wits about you, do your research, as you said, be very specific around what it is you want to achieve, know exactly what it is you have to do in order to get that return on the investment, and just be as strategic about it as you can.
The flipping is, yeah, the detail is definitely in the planning, and that's where the most benefit you're going to get is in planning before you even begin. And I think you're absolutely right with those reno shows. It kind of gets people fired up, and then they see, you know, other people doing it. Maybe they've gone to a barbecue and heard a story about how someone's made, you know, 20, 30, 50 grand flipping property. That's what I'm going to do. But they haven't stopped to look, well, is it suitable for me? Like, I work full time and my job's stressful and that kind of thing. And that's where they get stuck and realize that it's not actually making a quick buck at all.
Exactly. And then if you end up having to hire other experts, it could be that then by that point in time, by the time you've paid them and paid for all the costs and materials and everything, you haven't achieved the result that you were hoping to achieve. So all those sorts of things. Now, when it comes to doing your research, how can you know? How can you know where you are in that market cycle? If, you know, if you're at the peak or at the top, is it slowing down? What's it doing? How can you know those sorts of things?
Yeah, it's funny. Research is a funny little thing. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on with property and a lot of stuff to look at. And you can't 100% completely know for sure. There's always going to be risk with any kind of investment, and property is no different. If you're looking at where your property is or where your suburb is in a property cycle, there's a few things that you can look at. Vacancy rates is one thing. Rents, if the rents are rising in your suburb, then that generally means that property prices will rise shortly after. That's kind of an indicator. Also, you'd look at the infrastructure around you. If there's been a lot of investment in infrastructure, then that kind of helps with the market. How many properties are on the market and how quickly are they selling? So if a property is listed for sale and it sits on the market for, you know, 30, 60 days, then it's not really at the peak of the market yet. But if it's on listed and it's sold within days, then it's a hot market. That kind of thing, that's the thing that you need to be looking at.
And sources for this sort of information, where do you suggest people go?
Real estate agents. Once you know what to ask, real estate agents are a wealth of knowledge. So they'll be able to give you comparable sales in the area. They've got access to all those data software that shows you what's happening. Historical data will always be a better indicator than opinion on what's going to happen. So RP Data, Price Finder, those kind of programs show what is sold, when it's sold, how long it's been on the market for nearly every single property. So if you can get reports from real estate agents, that'll be hugely helpful. They'll also be able to tell you, you know, how many they've got listed for sale now, what the rental yields are like and things like that.
And is it worth, I guess, discounting the value that the agents give you? I guess from a perspective, I, for example, some years ago sold an investment property where, you know, all the agents would say, oh, you know, we could get X amount for easy, no problems. And then next thing I know, it's on the market. They haven't really sussed out the people who were offering. So we had someone sort of waste our time. And by that point, the people who were interested in the property had already moved on. And next thing I know, the agent's advising me to accept an offer that was $70,000 less than what the agent was saying they could easily get. So that kind of bait and switch, I suppose, does that tend to happen a lot in your experience? Is it sort of worth sort of saying, okay, well, if the agents are saying they can get, I don't know, $500 for it, I'm going to assume that we're doing well if we get $450.
Yeah, that's where I think that the more appraisals you can get will be a better indicator, and then doing your own backup research in regards to that. Absolutely, I know there's a big problem in regards to pricing, especially in Victoria. I believe they're changing the laws there to stop that kind of thing happening. But I know myself that if I get, say, five agents out to give an appraisal and three of them are, you know, around the same price and then one of them is, you know, $150,000 more than everyone else, then that kind of indicates that they don't really know the area. They may not know. They're kind of just pulling a figure out of thin air. But then once I get a general price from the agents and then I can actually do my own research on realestate.com.au or domain, and I can see, oh yeah, well, that house around the corner is listed for that and it's four bedrooms, same as mine, it's got two bathrooms. Okay, well, then I can ask that agent, you know, what kind of interest has that property got? And then if I know that two houses down is recently sold 6 months ago and they got this price, then that kind of helps give an accurate indication. So it's always good to get opinions from others, experts in their field, but then follow it up with your own research and your own gut feeling.
Do you have any thoughts on sort of selling the property yourself versus using a real estate agent? I know for many it's very tempting to go, and I know there's a few of the online, you know, DIYs where you pay, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000, you get all the packs and everything that you need for the for sale sign and all the rest, and you can go and sell it yourself. What are your thoughts on doing that versus using a real estate agent?
Well, it definitely can be tempting. I know that a lot of people balk at the price that the real estate agents get their commissions. Personally, I wouldn't do it because I know that I'm not a very good negotiator. So I wouldn't feel comfortable in that role. And I know that if I was looking to buy a house, I would feel uncomfortable negotiating direct with the owner. The agent gives you the buffer where you can speak to them and then they can speak to the vendor. I know personally that I've had friends that have tried to sell themselves and the house has sat there for a lot longer than it should have. They always say that your best offer is generally the first offer. Like that will be a kind of a good indication. So you don't want your property sitting there for a longer amount of time than it needs to. So, and I think that selling it yourself may be tempting, but unless you have those skills that a real estate agent has, I would probably avoid it.
And on the flip side with buying, what are your thoughts on buyer's agents?
Buyer's agents are very effective in a situation where you don't personally have the time to do the research and go out and view properties. So a buyer's agent can be highly effective in that respect. Buyer's agents are very, like, they really are real estate agents. So they have the same skills that a real estate agent has. They're able to negotiate effectively. They're able to, you know, go to auction for you if you don't feel comfortable going to auction. They are in the market every single day. They know what's selling, what's not selling, why it's selling. What, if you get a buyer's agent in a particular suburb and that's their specialty, they will know the good parts, they'll know the bad parts, they'll tell you why you shouldn't buy there, why you should buy there, that kind of thing. So, yeah, if you don't have the time, skills, or even the confidence to do it yourself, a buyer's agent is definitely a good option.
Okay. And do they tend to specialise more in investment properties rather than owner-occupied purchases?
Well, the buyer's agents I've spoken to, their clients are a mixture of both. They'll get a lot of investors from interstate that want to buy. And, you know, if you're a true investor, that's what you'd be doing. You'd be diversifying into markets in other states, not just in your hometown. So they get a lot of different clientele that way. They also buy for a lot of homeowners as well that just are not confident in dealing with real estate agents.
Is there anything as far as how to do your research on a buyer's agent? I mean, you know, it's the same thing with everything. The fact that someone is in a particular profession doesn't mean they're actually good at what they do. How do you, I guess, do your research if you're going to entrust someone to act on your behalf to know that they are an expert and will actually deliver on their promise?
Yeah, well, testimonials are always very good. Even if they don't have testimonials on their site or can provide you ones, you can get a list of their previous clients. There is buyer's agents out there that just deal with certain areas, like there's a Gold Coast buyer's agent or one that's specifically for Melbourne. But then I also know other buyer's agents that work purely for investors, so they will find the growth areas and they will invest all their time in that area and recommend their clients buy there. And that's a kind of different kettle of fish. But you always need to ask your buyer's agent or any professional really is how they're getting paid. So a lot of buyer's agents will recommend you invest in a growth area and they'll provide you advice for free, but they're actually getting paid by the developer. And so if that's the case, I kind of ask, well, if the developer's paying you, are you working for the developer or are you working for me? You know, it's kind of like a conflict of interest. So to really find out, you need to ask them how they're getting paid. And if they're getting paid by someone other than you, then I believe there may be a conflict of interest there. Mm. So that's something that you need to be aware of. But, yeah, testimonials and then just, I always say, trust your gut. If something doesn't seem right, it's the same with real estate agents. Like I've spoken to a lot when I was selling in a state and I didn't have a chance to, you know, go down and speak to them face-to-face. But over the phone, I got a feeling for, you know, what type of person they were, their mannerisms, that kind of thing. So, you know, we all, women especially, you know, are in tune with our gut more than anyone and our intuition. So if we trust it more, I think it always creates a better outcome.
And how do buyer's agents tend to charge? Is it typically a flat fee, a percentage? How does it tend to work?
The ones that I've dealt with generally are a flat fee. Some of them may work on percentage, but then I have to wonder if that's going to be in the best interest for you.
If you're not going to use a buyer's agent and you are looking at investing in property yourself, do you suggest looking for different traits depending on whether you want the investment property for its rental income or whether you're looking for capital growth?
Yes. So this will come down to what you want to achieve. So do you want to hold it for the short term and get a higher return, or do you want to hold it for long term and get the growth? Sometimes you can be very lucky and find a property that will give you both. It will give you both money back in your pocket every week and also will be growing with the market. But then generally you need to work out whether you want to have the return and it be positively geared, or whether you want to have a negatively geared property that will bring you growth in the end.
What sort of traits then would those properties tend to have? You know, would you be looking at buying in different areas depending on what's going on? You know, how do you then do your research if you have a different goal in mind?
Yeah. So generally, higher growth properties are closer to city centres, and higher rental yields, generally speaking, are in regional areas. So the rental returns are actually higher than what the costs are of the property. So you'd be looking at what the yield would be. An average yield, I would say, would be around 5 to 10%. A 5% one will not give you a return. So you've got to weigh up whether you can afford to hold a growth property. You've got to know what the costs are every week that will be coming out of your proper pocket to hold that property.
So where would you go for information? So we've spoken about how to research specific properties within an area, but you also need to have a knowledge on where the economy is at, what's happening in those areas. So for example, the people who have really are now suffering that the end of the mining boom has taken place, you know, the ones that did well are the ones that had either the experts to guide them or were keeping an eye on things, knew where things were heading before it got there, and were able to get out in time, grab the profit in the meantime, and that was that. The ones who are now suffering are the ones who were not well informed, were not aware to keep an eye on those sorts of things. You know, we're just thinking property will always only ever go up regardless of what happens. And they're now holding on to something that has now severely declined in value. They're looking at serious vacancy rates, all that sort of stuff, and they're really starting to feel the pain from that. So how do you put yourself in a position so that you're not one of those people that's getting caught out, but you are more likely to be someone who's informed, who can see ahead of time what is likely to happen and is able to make decisions accordingly? Where do you go to get that sort of information?
Like I said previously, there is always risk. You just got to work out how much risk you're prepared to take. I like to sit and hold my properties, so I wouldn't invest in mining. It's too great a risk for me. But where you go would be, you know, there's property commentators out there like Terry Ryder from Hotspotting. That's their sole job, is to research and provide reports on what's going on. So they're a good source to find the information. But I always recommend to my clients to monitor their properties and just, you know, work out what the best situation for them is, what the risk is at every time. Like every 6 months, say you'd look at your property and go, oh, well, the market there is starting to decline. You know, if it declines any further, am I still able to comfortably afford it? What's the risks of me holding it and not having a tenant, or holding it and not being able to sell it? Like, is the risk too great? And then you've got to decide whether it's time to get out. And there'll always be people that get out too early or get out too late. And like, it's a bit unpredictable in that sense. But as long as you're aware and you keep, you know, your finger on the pulse on what's happening in that area. And again, real estate agents will be able to give you the details if you keep in touch with the real estate agents and the property managers in those areas regularly. They'll be able to tell you what the market's doing at any given time.
Exactly. And it's knowing, you know, is that area subject to, as we've said, you know, in the case of mining, that it's so specialised, and that's sort of what most people do. So it's at the mercy of a particular industry. You know, in Canberra, we're at the mercy of government. You know, we have so many people who work for government, who are contractors for government, and government decisions will seriously impact the rental market, you know, whether there's more people coming into work or if they decide that they're cutting public service numbers and they're sacking everyone, we feel that pain. So it's around keeping all that in mind and knowing exactly what you're getting into. Don't just blindly go by that whole, you know, I just see it so much, especially on social media, just buy now, you know, people are worried about being priced out of the Sydney market and that sort of thing. And other people are saying, you know, just go in now. Don't worry about saving a deposit. It's only going to get worse. Just go, 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 go. And I'm sort of trying to say, you know, go cool your heels a little bit and see, because property prices can go backwards. How long it's going to take for it to improve and correct itself and start to go back up in value, you know, it can take years. And this is why we talk about shares and property being long-term investments. It's why we talk about getting educated and spreading your risk risks are diversifying. Don't have all of your properties just being in WA or all of your properties in the mining sector, that sort of thing. Same way you wouldn't buy shares purely, you know, in just one sector. You want to make sure that you're spreading all that risk out so that if something happens in one area, you're not completely at the mercy. And the way that you make money from any investment is to put yourself in a position that you're taking risks that you can afford to take, which means that you're not forced to sell out when the market goes backwards. You want to be in a position to hold on. If things aren't going your way and you haven't sold at that time, or you bought when it was too high, you want to make sure that you can afford it, which means being able to handle, as we've said, vacancy rates and those sorts of things, and not just sort of going, well, I'm going to buy a property which I'm going to sell in 12 to 18 months. As you said earlier with the property that you sold, that next lot who bought it, they weren't able to sell it 18 months later for what you had sold it for. 18 months is a very short time frame as far as holding any form of investment. Yes, yes. You can sell in that time and make a lot of money. That's great, but that's worked in your favor and there's been an element of luck in play, but you have to also prepare for the worst side of it, to go, well, what if this investment takes 5 to 10 years, for example, to start giving me that level of return and really start paying off? Am I in a position that I'm going to be able to afford to hold on to it? Are we planning on moving? Are we going to have kids? Am I going to then, are we going to go from being in a double income to a single income? How's that going to affect things? Talking 5, 10 years down the track, really having that long-term view. And yeah, if you make a profit sooner and you can sell out of that investment and cash in on that profit, that's great. But you want to make sure that you're not putting yourself in a position where you're starting to lose money rather than make money from that investment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny you should say that, because I've just recently just was writing about, you know, the power of pause. And, you know, I just talked to you before this call about how I've actually just stopped for a little while and just reflected on where I am. And there's definitely benefits in people doing that, because I find that the property industry in particular is very hype driven. It plays on people's emotions. It kind of gets people worked up going, well, you need to do it now or you're going to miss out. Like, the fear of missing out is great in this industry. So, you know, that's why I think the more you know, and the more you know about your personal situation, where you are now, where you want to be, what you want to achieve, the greater position you will be in. A lot of people fall into the trap of seeing what others are doing and want that too, but they don't stop and go, well, is it right for me? So, yeah, and always, always, always have your buffers in place. Always.
Exactly, because there's no point. And, you know, we've for so long been talking about property in Australia, and are we in a property bubble, and is it going to burst? And there's those who are saying, no, Australia is different to other markets in the rest of the world. Well, they've had the same situation and then property values have gone backwards. And there's the phrase, opinions are like, I'm not going to swear, but everyone has an opinion. So, yes. And anyway, you'll find experts that will say one thing and experts that will say the exact opposite. And, you know, and there's 50-50 odds of one of those guys being right. You can't necessarily afford to take that risk. So it's about making sure that regardless of what happens, you're putting yourself in the best position to hold on to those investments. You know, what's going to happen with Sydney and Melbourne? Are they going to cool down or not? Really, that's going to, only time is really going to tell those things. We're going to be seeing what's going to be the effect of all of the new apartments and developments that are coming on board. We're now in a situation where really this has been unprecedented in Australia's history as far as how low interest rates are, but also that we're now in a position where banks are moving out of sync with the RBA. So even if the RBA is holding the cash rate or even reducing, we're seeing banks going the other way. So this is something that it's now a very hard area for any expert to sort of say, here's what I think is going to happen, because we're now dealing with things that we haven't really seen before. And the global economy is suffering in a way it hasn't really to such an extent in the past as well. So there's just so many unknown factors at the moment that really we're just going to have to see how it all plays out and what happens. We might end up, yeah, property prices might continue to keep rising in Australia. We might have a bubble that bursts quite dramatically, like what happened in the US post-GFC. It might end up happening the way it happened in Japan, where it was just a steady thing. It wasn't something that hit headlines overnight. It was just gradually starting to happen. There could be any number of ways that this plays out. So please don't just buy into the hype of this is definitely what's going to happen. That's one expert's opinion, you know, and half the time they're wrong. And the economy is the same thing as what you said as with real estate, where it, you know, plays on people's emotions. Half of the whole challenge of running an economy, half of that is expectations. So if people expect there's going to be inflation, if people expect prices are going to go up or go down, they're going to start behaving in that way, which very often that ends up being a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if all of us expect property prices are going to go up, we're all going to start buying so that we don't miss out, that is going to push property prices up. If we all think prices are going to go down, we're all then going to start selling before we lose any money. And the act of everyone doing that is then going to start causing property prices to go down. So there is that element as well there. So it's,
yes,
it is quite complex and tricky for anyone to navigate and predict with any amount of certainty. So, you know, go do your research, get your ducks in a row, make sure you've got those emergency buffers in place, and then go for it and just make sure that you're making informed decisions along the way as you go.
Yeah, there's definitely power in your team too. So I always talk to my clients about building a really good quality team, and that includes, you know, financial advisor, broker, real estate agents that really, you know, you trust, that give you right information. Like, I always read the RBA reports whenever they make a monetary decision, because that gives an indication on what the economy is doing. But like you said, everyone has an opinion. You just need to make sure that you're asking your trusted advisors what they think and evaluating it based on your situation. So that's where the power in building a really good quality team that's going to give you really good quality advice comes into play.
Absolutely. And I would also add to that, having your own knowledge and education. Yes, you can't be the expert at everything, and absolutely great to hire experts to guide you along the way. But you also need to have a basic level of knowledge so that you know what direction to give, what questions to ask, and to know whether the experts you're hiring share the same values and beliefs as you do. So if you absolutely are someone who loves investing in property, there's no point hiring an advisor who believes investing in shares is the way to go, or whatever the case may be. So you need to get yourself informed and first figure out for you what you feel most comfortable with, what things you tend to agree with, and then go and find, because there's any number of ways to achieve a financial goal, and you can go and hire 5 different financial advisors, give them the same instruction. You'll get 5 different strategies on how to get there. So you need to have some idea of what it is you're comfortable with, what you agree, what your opinion is, and then go from there to find the team that is going to fit that mold and help you grow in the way that you're comfortable with as well.
Yes, absolutely. A classic example is our neighbours. They're elderly and they got a good advisor that they swear by, they highly recommend. They told us to go and see them, which we did, and he was a really nice guy and he had really great advice, but the report came back telling us to do a lot of strategies that were just not suitable for us, because we're not elderly, we're not near retirement or in retirement like our neighbours. So while that advisor was a great advisor, he wasn't a great advisor for us. So it was just a totally wasted exercise. So you've got to work out who's going to be right for you.
Exactly. And Katie, before we wrap up, I just wanted to touch on your book and your course. So you've got a book, Chicks and Mortar, A Woman's Guide to Investing in Property. And I absolutely love it. You have really, you've thought of everything. You know, you've got the mindset side of things. You're talking about how does the whole finance process work and serviceability and what you need to be prepared for that, how to do your research. You know, there's so much great stuff in this book. How can people get their hands on it?
Oh, thank you so much, Tash. Yeah, you can just go to my website, which is chicksandmortar.com.au, and there's a book link there that you can go straight in and buy a book direct. And if you input the code SENSE in the city, then I'll be giving all your listeners $5 off each book.
Fantastic. That's a great offer. And for those who want a more hands-on approach and guidance, you've also got a course, is that right?
Yes, I have a property academy. At the moment, it's an investor academy, but I will be bringing in other elements, which is building, renovating and design, because I just feel that not everyone just goes on one course when it comes to property, and there's a whole other lot of elements that come into play. So if you go to, again, to my website, chicksandmortar.com.au, there'll be all the information there on how to join the academy.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Katie. There's some great advice and it's really been a pleasure chatting to you.
Oh, no, thank you, Tash. I've had a lot of fun.